please give me your full name?
Warren Lewis Rowe.
And when and
Junior,
where?
Junior, originally.
Junior?
Uh-huh.
When and where were you born?
Boise, Idaho, May 1st, 1926.
Okay. What brought you to Union?
Well, it was actually an exchange of prisoners. What happened was that they made a big division between the Social Security division that was in California and the one that was up here. Well, after that was done, well, there were people on both sides that didn't want to be there. They wanted to go back to the areas that they knew and that they wanted. So we had what we called an exchange of prisoners. In effect, they spent a lot of money training me, and they didn't want me to quit.
You had been working in Social Security in Idaho?
Yes, I worked in Idaho, and I worked in California.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came here, and I stayed here, because I liked it.
What has attracted you to Social Security work in the first place?
Well, that was purely an accident.
Like so many careers.
Yeah. What happened, I first went to work for the Forest Service. Yeah, as soon as I come out of college, and went down to New Mexico, and I would have had a good deal there if I could have stayed, but they were going to make me manager. Eventually, they had me marked for manager of the entomological lab there. So I graduated as an entomologist. And but I had been, I married, you know, and I was going to school. And I guess I might as well tell the truth. I sent my wife home to have a baby, which was a mistake. Her mother, we had no problems between us. Her mother was one of these, you've heard of witches? Well, she had all the attributes. Anyway, that wasn't the first marriage she broke up, and she had her so brainwashed after she had that baby that that we just simply broke up. Now, I came back from New Mexico because I was trying to save the marriage, which I didn't do. Okay. Anyway, then I went to work for the Forest Service in, out of Boise on a spruce budworm spray project up in the area, Warm Lake in that area, where I had, well, we had a cabin there, as a matter of fact. Anyway, when that was over with, then I had put in my application for various agencies, you know, where I wanted to go to work. I'd take a test and all this. And the first one that came along was Social Security Administration. And they offered a good salary. In fact, they offered a better salary than I would have gotten as an entomologist, you know. So I thought, well, hey, that's all right. Mm-hmm. So I went to work for Social Security. And then they trained me. They sent me down to California to Berkeley, and anyway, they sent me for the real training. They sent me back east to Philadelphia, and we trained back there, and we came back out, and I went to work in the Lewiston office, Lewiston, Idaho, and from there I got promoted, and they sent me down to Bakersfield, California, and I didn't like Bakersfield. I always said that we were in training for hell, because that's the only place I've ever been, and I've been in the tropics. Only place I've ever been where the tops of the trees were burned brown in the summertime, live trees.
Well, this exchange of prisoners you spoke of, apparently from what you said, or I infer anyway, that you really wanted to come to Eastern
Oregon. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And was this because?
I gave them an ultimatum.
there were long-time family connections here?
No, that's another strange thing.
You didn't know that there were
I did not here? Know there was any family here.
It sounds as though fate might have been guiding you.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, there were some of us in Boise, and some of these people had visited there. But I really didn't know anything about my family, about the Rose, you know. I came to this valley and I found out I'm related to all these Rose around here. There's one group that thinks we aren't related, but we are. We attend the same funerals sometimes.
So, and without going into a great deal of detail about the Rose family, when had they come here, do you know?
Well, yeah. I've got the date that he came. I can't remember the date, but it's in the, information I get. I think it was in the 1800s, yeah.
And did they come here to farm?
Yes. And the first one was that great uncle that I told you about. And he came here to farm and you know, opportunities out here.
I think I heard heard the term somewhere, Sand Ridge.
That's right. Well, he actually eventually owned 2,000 acres on the Sand Ridge.
Mm-hmm. And would you give your explanation of where that is?
Well, as you're going out of LeGrand, you're going out of LeGrand towards Cove. The Sand Ridge starts there. You cross this little ridge.
Oh, that one.
And then it runs all the way out past, well, of course, like you said, of course, past Somerville.
But it was near Cove where your family was?
No. It was in the middle of the valley. Middle of the valley.
Okay.
And he had a lot of grain elevators there. He was quite a character. I don't know. I guess I might as well tell you about him.
Well,
he was quite a character. He bought up a lot of ranches, and every one of those ranches, he put a widow there in the house on the ranch, a widow. He was quite the goer and the blower. he served in the state legislature here in Oregon, and he was a school teacher. He just out of Somerville, that I think that dry creek, he taught there. And
what was his name again?
I'm sorry, I'm having.
All right.
He's right there.
Yeah.
That's not good. Okay, Jonas Luther wrote. And I think I can tell you when he came out here. I think I got it in the, he was a farmer, a teacher, and a state legislator in 1888. And, if you want to stop for a second, I'll look at it. Okay, it's not that near, it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
The region justly celebrated for the production of wheat. This is stuff that I took out of.
Mm-hmm.
And he farmed, and he did real well, of course.
So what relation did you say you think he was?
A great uncle.
A great uncle.
Yeah. And then he said, he later, Newton Jasper, he said to the family, he says, come on out and join him. So Newton Jasper came out, and that was a brother to him. And they both at one time lived in Emblem. But anyway, he's buried in the Somerville Cemetery, by the way. And in fact, I can tell you where he is exactly. And his wife, of course, was Lucy Catherine Rowe, and she died. And I think that was the only woman he ever really loved. I think the others were just old friends.
Does your discovery that you had long dead relatives here affect the way you feel about this place?
Oh yeah, this is home now. Actually, of course, Cornelia Diana Butler, that was the wife of Newton, his brother, and Newton is my great great grandfather, and she is my great great grandmother. She's buried in the first row up here in the Union Cemetery, and I did not know that when I came here. I did not know any of these rows were related to me, and I just got acquainted with them, and I don't know, I kind of become the family historian. I gathered their stuff.
Every family needs one, don't you think?
I guess.
Yes. And these papers that you showed me have quite a bit of detail about each of them.
A great deal of detail.
Yes.
Everything I could find out about it.
All right, I'll comb through those and perhaps include portions of that with the transcript of this interview.
Fine.
All right. Well, let's get back to Social Security and some of the details about the kind of work you did around here for Social Security. Some of your interactions with clients, for example.
I had taken a minor in psychology when I went to college, and believe me, I used
it. That was helpful.
Yeah. It's a strange thing, but with psychology alone, you can almost guide a person to say what you want them to say. And anyway, I got along real well with the older people here. We got along just fine. And I enjoyed interviewing them. I enjoyed, talking to them,
Was one of the parts of your job to determine their eligibility and their benefits?
That's right. That's right. That was my job. Mm-hmm. Their eligibility, their benefits,
was this,
and gather evidence to prove their age and their relationships. And
was this maybe somewhat more complex if they hadn't worked for a company, if they worked for themselves as farmers, for example?
Not really. Main thing that we had, well, in a way, yeah, a lot of these farmers they tried to keep from reporting any more income than possible, and you end up with smaller benefits that way.
Mm-hmm.
But
you mean to IRS?
Pardon me?
Reporting to IRS?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the thing. But the ones that worked for wages, of course, they were reported, although I found a lot of cases where these employers hadn't, and I investigated that, too. But
was it part of your job, then, to do research for prospective recipients as to what wages they had actually earned and what the sources might have been?
If they questioned something on their wages, yeah, we went looking for them to try to find them. And while I was there with the Social Security Administration, and George, too, by the way.
George Fleshman.
Yes, George Fleshman. We had a different philosophy than they've got now. Our philosophy was we're there to help those people, and we try to help them just as much as we can. I know in taking disability claims, we really developed their claims for them. We really did, you know. And we got a lot of those claims through those disability claims that wouldn't get through today because people are expected to do all this stuff themselves.
Where did that philosophy come from in your case? Was it something that you and George sort of allowed to grow out of your temperaments, or was it a policy matter set by the government?
It was a part of our temperaments, and also that's the way you were trained, that you were to give service. And
that was part of government policy. Then.
That was part of government policy. Well, it was part of our policy in Social Security. And we had more human leaders at that time than they do now. Now it's all statistics.
Human leaders, you mean people who had a sense of humanity?
That's right.
Okay.
Now, the ones that are on the top, they're only interested in statistics, and you've got to do good in statistics. They really don't give a darn about anything else.
Or even a damn, huh?
Yeah, right.
Well, tell me a little more, if you can remember, a few incidents of interactions with people.
Well, I'll tell you one that I think was kind of fun. I was trying to prove this lady's age. She didn't have a Bible, and she didn't have a birth certificate, and we were stymied. We just didn't know what to use. Well, she says, well, can I bring in my obituary and show it to you? And so I said, yeah, I'll bring it in. Well, come to find out, they had the big flu epidemic in 1918, and it killed a lot of people worldwide. Well, anyway, she brought in this obituary, and it gave her name and everything, and said that she had died on such and such a date, and the whole bit. And then she had the second one, which was a retraction. So with those two things, I proved her age. Pretty interesting. I know we can't use names, but I kept the list of names. There were some strange names. you know.
Did you, I assume you went out from the office to these people's homes?
Yeah, I went to, well, not to their homes. We went to what we call contact stations.
What was a contact station? A store?
Well, Baker, for instance, was a contact station. And their senior center and type of thing, and before they built the building, they came in on a certain day, and then I interviewed them in the order in which they came in, and did the same thing there that I did back at the office, you know. And I also traveled to John Day, and there was another contact station. Sometimes I even, most of the time somebody else went there, but sometimes I was even over to Pendleton at times.
Can you make any sort of generalization about the attitude that many of these people had when they came to seek Social Security benefits?
You didn't have the attitude you've got now. People think, you know, they're not going to get anything, a lot of them. But no, the people were really very, very nice and grateful that you were doing that for them.
They were confident that they would get benefits?
Absolutely.
Did they seem to have any understanding of how this program had come to be or why it existed?
No, just that not so much as they felt that they had earned it. It was a right, and it was.
Did they cite deductions made for Social Security while they were working? Did they know that the money was being deducted?
Oh, yes. They knew that. And
did they tend to have any clear idea of how much they might expect to receive for the rest of their lives?
No. That's one of the things they were really curious about, and one of the things, you know, that we developed because of the wages we had there. When they got the claim developed, we could tell them about what they'd be, and then, of course, they'd get an official notice.
Did that surprise many of them, whatever the figure was?
I don't remember seeing any surprise particularly. They seemed to be very grateful that they were getting anything. People had a more laid-back attitude then, much more laid-back than they do now.
By laid-back, you mean?
A lot of people have an aggressive attitude towards government. They didn't have it then.
With more gratitude than it was pushy expectations?
That's right. Of course, we did have some people that filed for disability. And there were some of them, and they'd come back and they'd file again and again and again. And they'd get turned down again and again and again. But people weren't disabled, they were just plain pure lazy. But thank goodness there weren't that many of them. Most of them that we dealt with were really disabled, I mean, if they filed a claim. Once again, people back then didn't seem to expect as much out of the Democrats.
Were most of the people you dealt with in their mid-60s?
Oh, yeah. Generally about anywhere from 62 to 65, you know, somewhere in there. Very seldom that we got any that were later than that. Oh, you're talking about some interesting things that happened. I remember this one fella that up there in Lewiston, but he lived in a chicken pen.
By himself?
By himself, yeah.
With the chickens or not?
No, there weren't any chickens in there. It was an old chicken pen, and he kind of cardboarded up the inside of it and said, and that fella, he really didn't want to get into paperwork too much, didn't want to do much of anything, and we really actually pushed him and worked with him and fiddled with him until we finally got him benefits, you know. But the guy, I think he was fighting us the other way, you know. And we had another fella, and I don't know whether he was whether he whether it is really true, but he claimed that he had been, and he was an old fellow at the time, and the fact is he should have filed for Social Security before, but anyway, he claimed that he had been with O.O. Howard's troops, and that when...
in the First World War?
I'm sorry, you don't know who O.O. Howard is, do you?
No, it's not a name that...
Okay. O.O. Howard was in the Civil War, and later in the Indian War, and he is the one that chased Chief Joseph across Idaho.
Oh, I've seen a picture of him.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Anyway, he claimed he was with that group. And when the thing was all over with and the Indians surrendered and everything, that he took two of the Nez Perce squaws, went into the mountains and trapped for 2 years. he was old enough, he could have done it. But I don't know if he was just windy in there, whether he was really telling the truth.
Well, imagination may have had played a role there.
Yeah, yeah. You might not want to put this one in, but I had a fellow there. You know, up in, out of Lewiston, there's Orofino and those areas up in there. Well, even back at that time, there were still houses of ill repute up there.
Yes.
And anyway, we had this one fellow who was real religious. Kind of pulled a trick on him. I sent him up to talk to this madam about coverage for her girls. And
this is one of your co-workers.
Yes, one of the co-workers, and I didn't tell him what it was, you know.
Are the prostitutes eligible for Social Security?
Sure they are, if they pay it. And anyway, sent him up there to interview her, and he interviewed her all right, and he come back, and that guy never swore in his life. He come back and he says, "God damn you." Sent him up there for that. I did do it on purpose.
Well, did he mean that he was shocked at her, or that you gave him a hard time in some way?
He was mad. Well, he was at least half mad at me because I had sent him in there without telling him anything about it and gave him a hard time.
So it was against his religious principles, and therefore he really didn't feel welcome or...
Well, he didn't feel
there.
Like he wanted to deal with them, you know, but he had to, of course, because, you know, they have just as much right as anybody else. But we had some interesting times.
So you continued working in the Grand Social Security office
right until I retired.
Well, first was it the office that's off 4th?
Yes, I was there in the office.
The one that Elmer.
As a matter of fact, there was one even earlier than that that was up there. You know where the clinic is, LeGrand Clinic.
Yes.
Okay. In the other end of that building, that's the first office I worked in. And then down and forth, and then of course this other one that they have now, that was later, after I left.
Yeah.
See, I retired for disability in the, in the 80s. I can't remember what date it was. But anyway.
What? Then were some of your principal memories, or not memories, but reactions to doing Social Security work in this area?
Well, I liked helping people. I enjoyed it.
You did that every day?
Yeah. Yeah. I, like I said, people had seemed to have a different attitude at that time.
Do you think that... being a somewhat remote area and a relatively small one, that working for the Social Security was considerably different from what it would it have been in a large city?
Oh, yeah. Their attitude is different. They're being pushed because there's so many of them and you're trying to get through all of them, so you don't have the time to take with them that you would otherwise.
In a city, you mean?
In a city, yeah.
And here, you were...
And here you took the time that was needed because, and you felt comfortable spending time with him because, like I said, I believed in service. We had, I think George did too, and all of us that worked in our particular group, we believed in service. And we liked people.
Since that apparently was part of your temperament and in your blood almost, were there other sorts of service activities you did in the Marin? George, I know, was in the Rotary Club, still is.
Yeah.
That's very much service-oriented.
Well, let's see. Not in LeGrand, because I wasn't there long enough. I was there just a few months, and then I moved over here to Union.
All right, let's talk about that. What drew you to Union as a place to live?
Well, at first, it wasn't anything about a place that drew me at all. I looked at Cove, and I looked at Union, and I looked around because we had a limited amount of income, you know. We weren't paid all that much money then, and we had a limited amount of income, and I was trying to make sure that I could find a place. I wanted to buy a place that I could make a down payment on, you know. Well, I tried Cove, different place there I'd like to have, but I just couldn't sweep the down payment. But I came over here, and by golly, this place was for sale. And, hey, the down payment was one I could handle. So I came here, and I bought this place.
Is this quite old, 100 years old?
1882.
All right. How do you know that?
Because I've been under this house all over the place, and there is a trash pile right under the house, and it's floored over. And I dated my newspapers and everything else, 1882.
Well, it was probably then, even before 1882.
Could have been, a little bit, yeah.
Have you looked up the deed?
I haven't.
Subsequent owners?
No, I haven't gone back into that. I really haven't.
So that's something you might not naturally do.
Right. And these little trees, these trees you see out here, I've got a picture of this house with those trees, but they're not as tall as I am. Over 100 years old, you know. There, matter of fact, they had one fall on the house last year.
So that was in about what day? 60s?
Yes. I think it was about 1961, somewhere in there.
Can you describe from your memory what Union, what kind of a town Union seemed to be at that time?
Oh, it was. It seemed to have a few more businesses now, and it's kind of a laid-back town. People are more relaxed here. Not like it's been recently. it was more relaxed, and the people were much more friendly than the people in LeGrand. Sorry, you're not going to like this, but the people in LeGrand are clannish, and the people here are not. And much easier to make friends here than it was there. And we were a young couple, you know, and we had a matter of fact, when we came here, my wife was pregnant. She had her baby here in the old Grand Round Hospital there. And we were a young couple. We went to the Methodist Church here, and we belonged to the Square Dance Club, and things like that, you know. We socialized with the younger people around town.
There,
all of a sudden I was older.
Was there a considerable visiting of people's houses?
Not really. It was that you generally met someplace where you were doing something.
You said it was
visiting
easy.
Visiting is kind of a lost art.
You said it was easy to make friends, so you did that primarily through sort of scheduled social activities
or organizations or whatever, but you made friends because those type of people were there too.
Most of the activities that had made Union in the first place were either closed or on the downslope when you got here, weren't they?
Yes.
The mill.
Yes, we still had a mill.
There were two or three factories, I think, manufacturing.
Yes, there was a place here that had, what was it, that they were making electronic parts of some kind, which is no longer here. Yeah, there were a few things, and there were a few more businesses, and there are a number of buildings that have been torn down now that were here then. But it was a small, laid-back town.
What did you detect at that time? Or if you didn't detect it at that time, when did you detect that there might be some interest in history here?
Well, originally, the interest was mine. I got real upset about something. In 1969, they made the movie Paint Your Wagon over here. Okay, the people that came from Hollywood and such, the museum that was in Haines, which had a lot of things that were loaned to it that they actually didn't own, and bought that. Well, the purpose of the meeting is to see if we couldn't figure out a way to have a Union County Museum. And
what was your proposal?
Well, what I originally, I was really carried away. I wanted to see a sub-museum in the various towns, you know. But I found out that was a bit impractical. You're hard enough running one museum, you know.
Did you have some ideas or suggestions about raising money for the purpose?
Well, I'll get into that.
Okay. That comes to mind quickly, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes. It came to mind immediately.
Yes.
Well, anyway, basically, there were a number of people that showed interest, but they didn't seem to show any interest in working,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
And so we kept working on it. Now, when I say we, I and O.C. Wilde used to be, he was in real estate here.
In Union?
In Union. We got very interested in this thing.
Is that W-Y-L-D-E?
W-I-L-D-E.
I-L-D-E.
Uh-huh. And anyway, I don't know why our wives didn't divorce us, because every evening after work, and we did this for months and months and months, well, gosh, for a couple of years, we'd go out in the evening and we'd go see people. Their hands out, that's for money, you know. And
what were you saying at that time was going to be the use of the money?
That we wanted to establish a museum and
buy a building?
And that was going a little too far. We wanted to establish, that was something that came, but it was something that kind of in the future, you know. Actually, what we wanted to do was establish a museum organization and then get a building. Yes, that would be part of it.
Start with rental?
Probably, yeah. And
how would you propose to start collecting things?
Well, we didn't have any problem with that. But let's go on.
You said people were selling them and shipping them away.
We really didn't have any problem with it when people found out we had a place. And one of the things we put in our original bylaws was that nothing could be sent outside the county that if our organization went defunct, we had to give it to a like type of organization in Union County. And we didn't want anything to ever go out. So anyway, we kept working on this thing of getting money, trying to gather money. And artifacts, people came to us and gave them to us. We had all kinds of stuff. I had them stored in my barn. Other people had them stored in their sheds and stuff like that, you know.
Did you evaluate them in any way when you got them?
No, other than we accepted them because they were historical. But as far as valuation, no, we hadn't got that far.
Were you accepting them at face value, that they were old?
Let's put it this way. I've seen these things enough in my lifetime that I know what's...
So you, in effect, were evaluating them.
Actually, yeah. I and others, of course.
Were there some things you rejected?
Yeah. Junk.
I'm not surprised at that.
But anyway, the upshot of it was that it was several years before we were able to do this. We kept searching for a place, and we searched all over Le Grand, couldn't find a spot, and although Dave Palm offered us his house, the old house that he had there, if we could come up with the money to keep it up. We didn't have any income to do something like that. So we told him that frankly so he would give it to us. So anyway, we kept looking, and eventually this old bank building down here that is the museum now, we gradually bought up the things that went both ways, but anyway, an old bank building was for sale, and the people that owned it were kind of friendly towards us and everything, made us a pretty good deal. So we went ahead and signed a contract and bought the building, not knowing where in the world the money was coming from, you know.
Do you remember the date for that? Approximately.
I'm trying to think. I think we're still in the... I think it... Let's see. Had to be in the 70s. And, but I don't remember the exact date. But the museum would have that.
Yeah, sure.
And,
Now, when you were talking to people about the museum and saying you would like to gather materials to put in it, did you have any kind of a theme for what the museum would be, how this museum would be organized, or what its focus would be?
Well, originally, my idea and some of the others was that any artifact that had historical value, you know.
But did it have to have something to do with Union County?
Not necessarily, but it would... it's the type of thing that was used in Union County, you know. Say we got a piece of furniture here that comes from Timbuktu, and that was the type of thing that they used in Union County. Sure, we were interested in it. But
were you focusing more on home furnishings than on outdoor equipment, for example?
Well, the first big gift that we got was home furnishings. And they're still there. Of course, here... furniture, and you've seen some of our rooms down there.
Yes, yeah. Sure.
Okay. Well, that's where that furniture stuff comes from. And then I have a lot of historic things, and I gave an awful lot of to the museum. I mean, I probably, all the various things that I've given, it's, you know, maybe thousands of dollars, you know. But, anyway,
were you at all interested in getting documents, letters, diaries?
At first, we were overwhelmed with the other, but yes, as time went on, that's why we went into the same type of thing that you're doing, that we interviewed on tapes, and it was our idea too to transcribe them and have them available for historic reasons, but. And we do have a lot of them in the vault, but they need to be transcribed yet. But anyway, I might tell you about the early days of the museum. In fact, I got some pictures here of the museum in the early days.
Back to the Union Museum. Once you had a building purchased and very little money, or no prospects for knowing where the money was going to come from, what did you do during the first year or so when you had that building?
I went to the people that, I and O.C. Wilde again, we went to the people who had money and we talked to them, and surprisingly, some of the ones you would be surprised about gave us money. And
Did you have to?
We kind of begged and borrowed, you know.
Did you present them with anything other than your own oral explanation of what you wanted to do?
Actually, no. We did give certificates of appreciation to people once in a while, but that's about it.
You did draw up, or you did become a formal organization, incorporated.
Oh yes, we're incorporated and
bylaws and all the rest.
Bylaws, yes. And the whole bit. I might mention, you're talking about meeting bills and so on. It was pretty hard there, and, for quite a few years. And there were times when we were coming up short. I and O.C. Wilde actually put our money into the museum.
I'm not surprised.
I remember at one time that we both of us put $400 a piece in. That's just one time.
Tell me about that.
I want to tell you one other thing.
Okay.
I and my wife, Carol, one just passed away, for many, many, many years, we paid all of the utilities of the museum right along with ours. So you see, we had to support the thing until, and then we started, and they started, well, actually, these latter few years, they're starting to get more grants and money given to them and such, and they've got a pretty fair budget now, and they've been able to do every, I might mention, I really had to fight with the board we had at the time, and I can be stubborn when I want to be, and to buy that annex over there where the old grocery store used to be, they didn't want to buy it, and they didn't want to commit themselves, and I growled and screamed and moaned and groaned, and actually I'm the reason they bought it, because I just made a nuisance of myself, and later, they came back to me and said, boy, we're sure glad you bought that. That'd give us a way to expand. And
tell me about some of the volunteer work in getting the museum started.
Well,
the actual labor of taking paint off or doing some interior redesign or whatever you had to do.
Well, basically, we used the building as is. We did take the plaster off the walls to show the bricks and stuff like that, but it was strictly volunteers. I mean, and I can't tell you who all, but we'd ask them if they'd come in and help.
Saturday work parties, for example.
Yeah, and they'd come in and help, and they went. They'd come in and help as volunteers, and we've had many volunteers over the years, including people who put roofing on and you know, actually. That was their business.
What sort of an arrangement did you set up at the beginning for supervising the work?
We did it ourselves.
Did you?
Well, I'm just one, you know. Whoever we had that had a little bit of sense about something like that, we let them say what needed to be done.
Were you able to draw any of the town merchants into this process?
Oh, yeah, we got money from some of them.
How about actual work?
Not really work, because the type of businesses we got here aren't into that type of thing.
Who was responsible for designing the exhibits or placing objects to the greatest advantage?
Volunteers again.
Well,
people who had an interest in history. And
well, how did you do that? Did you say, find Mrs. So-and-so who's interested in dresses and say to her, okay, you figure out a way to display these 16 dresses we have?
No, you're kind of omnivorous. what that means is you did everything.
I guess what I'm trying to find out is, were you going into this idea of having a museum almost blind as to how to do it? Or were you getting guidance or consultation from other people who had experience with museums?
We were almost blind to begin with.
it was the idea more than the actual look of the place that you were concerned about.
Right.
Did it look like a junk heap?
It really wasn't that bad. It was pretty bare, but it wasn't that bad.
Well,
but we did. We painted. We took the plaster off the walls. We had volunteers that made those little rooms like we've got, you know, and things like that. And then various ones who had a talent for this type of thing. If somebody says, I want to set up an exhibit, go to it, you know, type of thing.
You said you wanted to try to make sure that it was a countywide effort.
That's right.
Were you able to draw people from other parts of the valley?
We have tried very hard to draw people from other parts of the valley. We get some people from LeGrand, but we don't seem to be able to get anybody anywhere else, you know, and we've tried. They try all the time to get more people involved. It's a county thing, and it shouldn't be anything else but a county thing like that. I might mention, know the Historical Society?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you a member of it?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, when we wanted to establish this museum, we went to the Historical Society and said, we actually would have become a part of that organization if they had let us. Mm-hmm. But once again, you had this clique. Didn't want any part of it.
Was Bernal Hug still active in the organization?
Yes, uh-huh. They didn't want any part of it. And so we could see that we'd never have a museum that way. So we had formed our own organization.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever figure out why they didn't want to be part of the museum?
I think they were afraid that we might, well, they had kind of become a chowder and marching society at that time, and I think they were afraid that we were too dynamic and we'd take it over. Because we were younger and we were dynamic.
Are you willing to be publicly quoted on that?
On the...
what you just said?
Yeah, it's true. I hate to say that, but it is true. And by the way, that's my statement. That's not the museum statement.
You're not speaking for the board.
No. In any way.
You're not on the board anyway, are you?
No, I'm not.
You can't speak for them.
But...
were there any kinds of substantial assistance that came later from other parts of the county?
We had some substantial assistance from LeGrand, some individuals. We had some assistance from Cove. We had some money, you know, at various times. Trying to think. And of course, we've had some people from Union.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we went to people who had money.
Yeah. Sure.
And asked them.
Obvious thing to do.
Yeah. Ask them if they.
I don't think I've seen anything in that museum that brings a strong emphasis to the fact that Union, for a while, was the county seat, and that there was considerable anger and hostility that developed between
there still
some
is.
People in LeGrand and some people in Union over the county issue question.
There still is.
County seat question.
Still is. It was here the minute I got here.
Is there anything in the museum that really tells that story adequately, do you think?
I don't think so. And the reason why is, well, mostly it's just because nobody's done it. But I think maybe... we don't want a feud between everybody.
And again, well, at this point, it wouldn't be so much a feud, I should think. It would just be trying to be historically accurate about what happened.
Yeah. Well, the story's there, yes. I interviewed a lady that was 90-something years old at the time, or talked to a lady, I didn't interview her, and talked to a lady, and she remembered when LeGrand, as they say here, stole the county papers and...
Yes.
Drug a building over there from Union.
Mm-hmm.
Early one morning, I guess, is when it happened, and she saw it when they were leaving with it.
So, well, there was a boat, after all. Did people in Union think the boat was rigged?
Of course it was.
No. Okay, I hadn't heard that accusation.
All right. I'll tell you how it was rigged. First of all, they agitated until they got the part of the county that's part of Baker County now lopped off and become a part of Baker City. And that took enough votes out of wanting to have Union that LeGrand had tried several times and had failed every time because of the people up the branch here that didn't want them to do that. And So then they also went to the legislature, and LeGrand kind of got things set up there. And between the two, they had the preponderance. When you look at it now, see, the preponderance of people are there. They weren't before. And that's how they did it. And yes, it was rigged. It was political chicanery, just like they do now.
It all also had something to do with the route of the railroad, didn't it?
Well, you know the story behind that, don't you?
I know one story behind that, yes.
Okay.
I wonder
if it's the same story I know.
Well, a surveyor wanted a little payoff from the mayor of Union, and the mayor of Union said no.
He wanted some property right here in town. See, he wanted lots that he could sell. And that's right. And then he went out and around. And of course, that's cost him millions of dollars. And that was the reason for it. And LeGrand went for it.
Well, in these experiences you've had with the museum, you've probably come in fairly close contact with most of the people around here who care about history.
I think so.
Has it seemed to you that there are enough people who do care about history to really say that this museum represents the best thinking about history?
Well, let's put it this way. Since we have done this and made this tremendous effort and established this museum, there has been more interest in history in this county than there ever was before. And there are more people that appreciate things like that now. We marked the Victorian homes here in town, too, with signs, you know. And we have caused people to have an appreciation of these Victorian homes. Before, they were just old houses, you know.
Why isn't the Fye House marked that way?
Why isn't it marked? Mm-hmm. There was a sign.
No.
I don't know what they did with it.
Were these wooden signs?
Yes. They were in the shape of the county.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the type of construction that it was and when it was constructed, each one. There is one that's still up. People don't keep these things up, you know. There's one, I think, that's still up, and that's over here at if you're down to 5th Street, go down 5th on your left-hand side. In there, the Townley House.
Mm-hmm. That was a bed and breakfast for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, right. And it still has its sign. And there's one here at the end of town, too, that they're going to stop by and ask them to please pick up that sign and paint it again.
Was that sign project officially part of the museum?
It certainly was, and we marked all these houses. And nobody keeps anything up.
Well, maybe the choice of material was the mistake.
That could be.
But you can't afford
anything else.
Yeah, metal would have been much more expensive.
Right.
Do you think all of the information about each house is still readily available? Could the signs be duplicated?
Certainly they could. We published with the photographer. We published one description of all the houses, and I've got all kinds of material on each one of these houses up here, a lot of historic material. I've got a lot of historic material if you want to go through it. You haven't looked at any part of it, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do. I think you said that you were trying to make signs for places in other parts of the valley, not just historic houses in Union.
Imbler, we went as a sign for Imbler and one for Somerville and so on. And we made some of these signs and we put them out. And every one of them was stolen. Torn down.
But they could be duplicated.
So we gave them up. Sure they could be duplicated. You bet. We've got the history. I've got all kinds of history up here.
Have you seen the signs that have been put on several of the downtown LeGrand buildings?
Yeah, those are nice.
Yeah. I think they probably got a grant to cover the costs for that.
But you, there's one thing you got to be careful.
I don't think they're going to be stolen.
Yeah. You got to be careful where you put your signs.
Oh, yes.
Because you've got these vandals that will tear these things down anyway. And it really, unfortunately, that's the way it is, you know. I don't know what to tell you about it, except that you do the best you can, you know.
Has the Union Museum Board had any connection with the Elgin Museum?
No. They went off on their own. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what we originally wanted anyway, a museum in each town. Great. I hope they do well. You know.
I think I've heard a little talk about having something in Cove.
I've heard a little talk about it. Then they talk about that railroad museum in LeGrand, which is all of these things are good things.
And you know about the fire museum.
Yes,
it's not
yes.
quite open
no,
yet.
All of those things are good things.
It's very much part of the concept you had, apparently.
Right. Originally, that's what I wanted. Fact is, I looked at the post office over there in North Powder. We were thinking about buying it, and also we looked at the building across the street from it. But monetary problems caught up with us. We just couldn't swing it, you know. There's a lot of things we'd have liked to have done, so we did what we could do.
Sure.
And I think, just between you and I and the gatepost, I think that we're the reason that historical things are going so well in the county now is because we got people interested. And we showed them there was value in these things.
So that's about a 30-year effort now.
At least that, yes. Well, yeah, 1969.
Well, I bet you said the museum was started in its early 70s.
And no, 1969 is when we had the first meeting. Okay.
But you got the building.
The building.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk now about your friend of the court kind of involvement with Union, the town of Union.
Well, over the years...
Not an employee, but a helper.
Right. Over the years, I have been involved in a lot of different things in Union. For one thing, I was involved in acquiring the BMW hall down here.
Part of it,
you know. And
acquiring it for what?
For the BFW. Originally, that was the women's club.
Huh.
And the women's club...
That's on Main Street?
Yes. The women's club wanted us to have it. And so they worked out a good deal with the BFW. And of course, there were others, many involved, you know.
What had the Union Women's Club done? Why did they have to have a building?
It was built, believe it or not, that building was built by the students up here at the Union High School way back with their instructor, you know, guiding them. The Women's Club used to be a very active civic organization. And then they got older and they called, unofficially they called it the Old Women's Club. And
did they use the building for
use the building for their meetings,
civic events?
Their meetings and things like there's some civic events took place there.
I think it's unusual for a women's club or a men's club for that matter in a small town to have a building, to own a building, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess it is. Anyway, the BFW owns it now, and they let any civic organization use it. We've had the city itself meet down there.
Mm-hmm. How were you involved in the city's negotiations?
Well, for one thing, the Forest Service complex out here, when we found out that the Forest Service was going to move out of it, we contacted our congressman. We also contacted Actually, I did a lot of writing on this.
Would you describe again where the Forest Service building was?
Okay, it's on the, as you're coming into town from LeGrand, it's on the left-hand side, directly across from the boulder.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And is that building still there?
Yeah, there's several buildings there. There's three main buildings out towards the front, and there's a building there used to keep their oil supplies in. There's a warehouse. There's a garage.
All built for the Forest Service?
All built for the Forest Service. And then there's quite a bit of land there around it. The city acquired that from the... after the Forest Service let go of it, from the one that sells government property. And like I said, I wrote and contacted our congressman. I